holding on, Bays Umud Bays, about the middle of the wide lines. The line begins Kimmelkofen. 13 lines from the bottom. Kimmelkofen, 15 lines from the bottom, right there. We're in the middle of discussing. So we said that the definition of a city for the definition of a walled city for purposes of Megillah reading is the Mishnah had said that that if it was walled from the time of Yehoshua ben Nun. Then we had Rabbi Yehoshua ben Korcha saying that no, if it was walled in the time of Ahasuerus, in the time when the story of Purim actually happened. And we're talking about why the different opinions. The Tanakhama has a Gzeira Shava on it, and Rabbi Yehoshua ben Korcha doesn't hold of that Gzeira Shava. So the Gemara says, Bishlem Latana Didan. I understand, according to our Tana, that there's a difference between cities that are walled at a given time. It depends whether they were walled in the time of Yehoshua or not. The Megillah says, near the end of Megillah Esther, it says that Purim is celebrated Medino Medina. Literally, the simple meaning means in every country, Ve'ir Vo'ir, and in every city. But the double expression, Medino Medina, and the double expression, Ve'ir Vo'ir, suggests that there's different kinds of Medinas and different kinds of ir. So we understand, according to the Tanakh Kama, Medino Medina, why when it says Medino Medina, where the Medina can also mean a large city. So therefore, l'chalak ben mukafin chaimim mimaisi yeshua ben nun l'mukafis chaimim mimaisi hashverish. So that comes to tell us there's a distinction between whether it was walled in the time of Yeshua ben Nun or whether it was not, and it's only walled in the time of Hashverish. And yuva'ir nami l'chalak ben shushan l'shara yaris. And we said shushan is an exception according to the Tanakhama, even though it was not walled in the time of Yeshua ben Nun, but because it was the actual place where the nest took place, therefore we also give it the status of a city that's Mukefes Chayma, and so the word ir va'ir comes to tell us that distinction. Among unwalled cities, there is a further distinction between Shushan and other cities. That's according to the Tanakhama. Elo l'Rabbi Yehoshua ben Korcha, but according to Rabbi Yehoshua ben Korcha, why do you have both of them? Bishleim Medino Medina l'chalak ben Shushan l'shara yaris. Sure, the Medino Medina tells us, according to him, there's a difference between Shushan and other cities. Ella, Irva, Irlamai also, but according to him, that all cities that are walled in the time of Ahasuerus have get to read and celebrate Purim on the 15th. So, what are we using Irva, Ir for? The answer is Amalach Rabbi Shoban Korcha with a Tana Didan Minicha. So, Rabbi Shoban Korcha is going to answer you new, and according to the Tana of our Mishnah, who says that it's from the time of Yeshua ben Nun, it's also not so easy to understand the pasuk. After all, Kibin de Islay prozi, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Korcha will tell you, listen, we just said that before, that the Tanakhama learns from Gzeira Shava on the word prozi, where it says over here, okay, now you heard about prozim, it says in Megillas Esther, and you have a pasuk in Parshas Devarim that says, Levad me'ore ha-prozi, and that's something that took place during Yeshua's lifetime. So once he has that, Medino Medina Lamali. So according to the Tanakhama, what would you need Medino Medina for? So Rabbi Yehoshua ben Korcha can tell you that you're saying that it's problematic according to me, but it doesn't work out so well according to the Tanakhama either. Why would the Anshe Knesset Sagdola have to put in the word Medino Medina, which according to what we just said was to distinguish between cities that were walled at different times in history, when he's anyway not learning it from there? He's anyway learning it from a pasuk a few psukim earlier in Megillas Esther. The answer is going to be that we're going to use the pasuk for something else, and once we're using it for something else, according to the Tanakhama, we can also use it for something else, according to Rabbi Yehoshua ben Korcha. You have to wait.
So why Rabbi Yehoshua ben Korcha didn't answer that answer? He didn't give that answer himself.
We're going to answer that right now. It's the next line of Gemara. Let's see. Ela kro l'drasha hudasa. The answer is, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Korcha will tell you, it's not correct to say that Medina ve'ir ve'ir is coming to distinguish between different kinds of cities and between different kinds of regular cities and different kinds of walled cities. Rather, the pasuk is coming for other drashas. V'chad Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi hudasa. Namely, it comes to tell us what Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi is going to tell us. Da'am Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, krach v'chola samuch loy, a walled, not only the walled city itself, but any place that is near it, and any part which is visible from the walled city, Nidin Kakach, is all considered like the walled city. In other words, it's not only the area within the walls that gets to read on the 15th and celebrate Purim on the 15th, but also any other place that's nearby there, which is nearby there, as we're going to say in a second, within a mill, and any place which is not so, which is near Imoy, which is visible from the city. There you have a machlokes we're showing him whether it also has to be within a mill or not. Anyway, so that's what Medina, Ve'ir Ve'ir is coming for that. So therefore, so in other words, the Pasuk would be telling us, in effect, any Ir Ve'ir, any city that is near the Medina is going to be like it. On Gimel Amud Beis, we'll see exactly what Samuch and Nira mean. But so the point is, so now, according to Rashi, it seems that we're saying that both Medina and Ir Ve'ir are coming to make that distinction. The Rashba talks about that that maybe actually, so okay, within Medina itself, we might be making the distinction still that there are different kinds of Medinas, depending whether they have a Sara Baklonim, that with that point we'll take up again on Gimel Amud Beis, about whether there's ever a difference with a walled city, what how many people there are in it, and how many Baklonim there are in it. In any case, the point is, so the answer would be, according to Rabbi Yishuv ben Karcha, and that answer follows, according to the Chachamim as well, that we're not actually learning from Medina about different kinds of walled cities as well. Rather, we're learning from that about the concept that whatever's near the city counts like the city itself. Therefore, so the Pasuk works out equally well like that, according to the Tanna Kamma, or according to Rabbi Yishuv ben Karcha, which was the point we were getting at. Okay. So now when we say that anything that's near the city is considered like the city, ad kama, how far can it be and still be considered like the city? The answer is the distance between, if it's less than the distance between Chamsan and Tveria, namely a mill. So Gemara says, v'leim a mill, why don't you just say straight out a mill? And the answer is Hakamash Malan, Reb Yirmiya or Reb Chiya Ba'aba wants you to know that the Shi'ura, the mill, Kamahavik and Chamsan to Tveria. What is the size of a mill is the amount of the distance from Chamsan to Tveria. Because otherwise you might not be easily be able to estimate it, and you have different kinds of Amos, and you have different ways of putting together the etzbois to form Amos. So like this, when you have an actual place which is known to be a mill, then we're going to use that as the basis for this. This gets into the interesting question, by the way. So nowadays, the only city in the world that celebrates Purim exclusively on the 15th is Yerushalayim. Now you have the old city of Yerushalayim is surrounded by a wall. The actual wall that's there now is from much, much later, is from the 1500s. But Yeshua definitely is a city that was walled in the time of Yeshua. Just the walls have been destroyed and rebuilt any number of times. But what about the whole new city of Yerushalayim nowadays, which extends for miles and miles outside the old city and it was never surrounded by a wall in the time of Yeshua? Do they celebrate Purim on the 15th or not? Based on our Gemara over here, it sounds like it would be only if they're within 2,000 amos of the old city. And in fact, there are some poskim that learn like that only certain parts of the old city would lain on the 15th, but the rest wouldn't. As far as I know, though, the majority of poskim hold that no, since the houses are basically continuous throughout the entire city of Yerushalayim, the old and the new, then therefore you continue, therefore the whole thing lanes on the 15th. They talk about maybe some of the outlying neighborhoods where you have a certain amount, where you have a green belt between them and other parts of Yerushalayim, whether they're still included in that or not. But the consensus seems to be that most, if not all, of Yerushalayim is considered the Samuch Venira Imay. They discussed the question actually during the 19 years after the Israeli War of Independence from 1948 to 67, when the whole old city was in the hands of the Arabs and no Jews were living there at all, whether that changes the halacha because now there's no Asar Baklonim in the old city. That gets into the question, which we're going to discuss a little bit on Gimel Amud Beis, about what happens if a big city doesn't have, if the walled city doesn't have those Asar Baklonim. So we'll get back to that. All right, since we're mentioning something that Rabbi Yirmiya or Rabbi Chiya Ba'aba said, so the Gemara mentions something else that he said. V'omer Rabbi Yirmiya v'itemer Rabbi Chiya Ba'aba, man sapach tsofim omrum. You have in the Aleph Beis, you have five letters that are different, that have different forms in the at the end of a word versus elsewhere. So those were said by the tsofim, meaning the Nevi'im. Rashi says, Nevi'ei hadoros. Tosfa says specifically, now the Gemara is going to explain soon that the Nevi'im didn't invent that on their own. They can't. What it means is the Gemara is going to end up saying that they forgot it and then reestablished it. So Tosfa says we're talking about We're talking about the Nevi'im, that the Nevi'im from the end of the first to the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash. So that you have, there used to be a there used to be a Sefer Torah in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Amon, one of the later kings of Yehuda, burnt it. So therefore, so now after that, they forgot what, as Gemara is going to say soon, what forms of the letters go at the beginnings and the ends of the words. So therefore, when we say Tzofim, we mean the Nevi'im after that time. Different other Rishonim talk about also that you have the Luchas, but the Luchas were hidden away by Yeshayahu, the son of Amon, together with the Aron, and therefore after that, people started forgetting. But first the Gemara is assuming. First, the Gemara doesn't know any of that. The Gemara starts the question with the assumption that we mean that they actually invented this. That, in other words, that before that there was only one form of Chaf and one form of Mem and so forth. And then they said that there should be a different form at the end of the word. So the Gemara says, by the way, Mephoshim point out, why are we saying in the order Man Sapach? Why not in the order of the Aleph Beis? Because the words Man Sapach suggest the words min tsefayich, from your Nevi'im. So the Gemara says, v'tispera, how could you think that they invented it? V'haksiv eila ha-mitzvahs. The Pasuk says, these are the mitzvahs, which Hashem told Moshe, meaning she'ein Navi rashoi l'chadash dover me'ata. No later Navi can come up with any new thing in Torah. So like this, the difference between the regular letters and the final letters is significant in Halacha. If you were to write the wrong one in a particular place in a Sefer Torah, it would be possible. So how could the Nevi'im, how could we say that the Nevi'im invent that? V'oid, and furthermore, ha'omer Rav Chista, mem v'samach shabaluchis v'neso yo'imdin. Rav Chista says that the shloss mem and the samach and the luchis, the insides of them stood there, remained there, b'derech nes, because, as we know, the letters of the luchis were engraved through, all the way through from one side to another. So therefore, there'd be nothing holding the middle of the shloss mem, the stone representing the middle of the shloss mem and the middle of the samach in place. It had to be b'derech nes. So that means, in other words, obviously, that there already existed shloss mem at the time of the giving of the Torah. Otherwise, an open mem, there's no particular nest in it. It has, you think of the inside of an open mem, it would be attached to what's outside of it because there's a space there. So doesn't that mean that they go back long before the Nevi'im? The answer is, the Gemara says, Ein mehabahabu. Sure, there were the regular letters and the final letters long before these tzofim, long before the time of Amon or Yoshiyahu or whatever. But v'loy habu yadi hei be'emtza teva v'hei be'emtza teva v'hei be'seif teva. They didn't know for each one, a regular mem and a shloss mem, for example, which one goes in the middle of a word and which one goes at the end of the word. So now the Nevi'im came and fixed it and made it the way we have it, that the psuchos are where they're at the beginning or the middle of a word, and the stumos are at the end of a word, and then the end of letters are at the end of a word. The Gemara says, Soif, Eila HaMitzvahs, She'ein Novi Osim B'chadash Dover Me'ata. Still, though, you still have the Eila HaMitzvahs, meaning that a Novi is not able to come up with something new, even if it was just that before that you could use them interchangeably, and now the Nevi'im set up which one is going to be used for this one, which one is going to be used for which purpose. That's also a chiddush in Torah, which Nevi'im can't do. Ella, no. The answer is shchochum v'chozru v'yistum. The answer is it was like that to begin with, but they forgot it, and now the Nevi'im reestablished it. So now, how do you forget such a thing? I mean, you write Aleph Beis every day, so you have a great deal of discussion about that among Rishonim. There is a different form of the Aleph Beis that was used in the time of the first Beis Hamikdash called Ksav Ivri, it's called Ksav Ratz, it's called Ksav Libunah, it has several different names. You look at, for example, your inscriptions from the time of the first Beis Hamikdash. You look, for example, at the Shiloyach Tunnel inscription. You have various other inscriptions that they found from that period are written in that form of the alphabet. Even in the second Beis Hamikdash, they used it for the Chashmonaim, for example, used it for their coins. So the idea would be that so many of the Rishonim talk about. So first of all, the Gemara in Sanhedrin actually brings up a possibility that maybe even to begin with, the Gemara brings one opinion over there that to begin with, the Torah was given in Ksav Ivri, and then they only started using Ksav Ashuris in Ezra's times at the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash. Well, then, in Ksav Ivri, you don't have a distinction between the regular and the final letter. There's only one form of Mem and only one form of Nun and so forth. So therefore, they might have forgotten. Many of the Mephoshim say that no, the Torah was saying over here the Luchas had the Mem and the Samach were the middles of them stayed B'derech Nes, showing that they already had those letters then. So many of the Mephoshim talk about the idea that originally the Torah was given in Ksav Ivra, but because the Jewish people didn't, so first of all, within that, there's a few possibilities. It might be that because the Jewish people didn't live up to the standards that require Ksav Ashuri, therefore the Nevi'im told them to use Ksav Ivra, and they used that for hundreds of years exclusively, and therefore everybody except maybe the Yechidis Gula forgot what Ksav Ashuri even looked like, and then it was reestablished only much later, and then the Nevi'im had to remind them what are the regular letters and what are the final letters. It could be another possibility they bring up is that indeed Ksav Ashuri was used for Sefer Torah, but again we said Amon burnt the Sefer Torah that was in the Beis HaMikdash, and not only that, but every other one he could get his hands on. So then after that they didn't have Sefer Torah as easily available, and the ones they had maybe were only written in Ksav Ivra, and therefore they forgot these things, and therefore the Nevi'im had to reestablish it. They talk about also that like this, you had again until Yeshayahu's times, you had the Aron in the Kodesh HaKadoshim with the Luchas in it, and the Luchas were saying were written in Ksav Ashuri, so they could look at them. But after that, it was hidden away underneath the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore they didn't have access to it. So eventually, there came a point. Whatever the case, according to all these things, the point is there came a point when Ksav Ashuri was a rare thing to see, and therefore the distinction between the regular and the final letters was also something very rare to see. And so the Nevi'im had to reestablish it for them. So that's what we mean when we say Mansapach Sofim Omrum. We don't mean that they invented it. We mean they reconstructed. They retaught the people the way it was originally when Hashem gave the Torah, that you have a certain form of a letter at the end of a word and a different form elsewhere in the word. Okay. Here's another thing Rabbi Yirmiyah, or some say Rabbi Chiya Ba'aba, said, Targum Shal Torah, the Aramaic translation of the main Aramaic translation of the Torah. Now you have several different translations. You're looking at Makros Gedolos, for example, you'll have, besides Targum Onkelos, you also have something there called Targum Yonason. But we're going to see from Al Gemara over here that it's not actually from Yonason ben Uzziel. Only the Targum and Nevi'im is from him. So there was more than one Targum out there, but the official Targum, the one that, for example, we use for Shnai Mikra Vechad Targum, or the one that they would use when they were doing the Targum in Shul, which we're going to talk about in the third and fourth parak of our Masechta, so that Unkelos HaGer Omroi, so Unkelos the Ger, where the Gemara mentions elsewhere, he was a nephew of Titus or Adrianus or whatever. Anyway, Omroi, Mipi Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Yeshua. He said that Targum in the name of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. So they taught him how to translate the Torah, and he went and produced the translation, which the Gemara actually explains elsewhere. Actually, the Gemara is going to explain further down on our Omud that, again, this is one of those Shochum v'Chozrum v'Yistum things. This is not something where Unkelos came up with the translation on his own. There was a Masorah of how to translate the Torah going back to Chagas, Chari, and Malachi. And again, it had been forgotten over the years, and he reconstructed it based on what Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua taught him. So that's the Targum of Chumash. Targum shall Nevi'im Yonason ben Uzziel Omer Nevi'pi Chagas Chayyom Malachi. The Targum of Nevi'im was composed by Yonason ben Uzziel in the name of Chagas Chayyom Malachi. Now here, Mipi, by the way, doesn't mean actually directly from. Unlike Unkelos, learned directly by Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, he lived in their times. Yonason ben Uzziel did not live in the times of Chagas Chayyom Malachi. He was several hundred years later. So Mipi over here doesn't mean directly from them. It means that he had the Kabbalah, what they had taught about how to translate Nevi'im, and then he wrote it down. And the Gemara continues, V'nizdaza Eretz Yisrael Arameis Parasa al Arameis Parasa. When he completed this translation, the whole Eretz Yisrael shook a distance of 400 by 400 parasa. In other words, there was a disapproval of it in Shemayim. Yotza Basko V'omra, Basko came out and called out, Mihu Zesh Gila Storai Livnei Adam. Who is this who's revealing my secrets to people? Because as the Gemara is going to point out soon, there are psukim and Nevi'im that are very obscure and we wouldn't know what they mean. And now with Yonis and Menuziel's translation, we understand them much better. So Hashem was expressing disapproval. How do you go and reveal these secrets to people? In fact, some of the Mephoshim say, well, so what's the problem? Let people know these secrets. Because For one thing, it means that now people are not going to apply themselves as diligently to learning the Vim. They're going to figure we can understand it easily. All we have to do is pick up Yonis and Menuzio's translation, and we'll know what it's talking about. We don't have to hold it in it. So that's what bothered Hashem. But Omer Yonis and Benuziel are Ragla, but Yonis and Benuziel responded. He got up on his feet. He says, I'm the one who revealed your secrets, but I'll tell you why I did it. Hashem, you know full well. See, I didn't do it for my cupboard. I didn't do it for the cupboard of my father's household. I did it for your cupboard. So that machlokas should not proliferate among Jewish people. Again, like this, when you have these very obscure psukim, nobody's going to know how to explain them. So at least like this, we're explaining them, and that way people won't continue arguing what they mean. You have many mephoshim disagree anyway on what those psukim mean, but at least it helped establish a little bit of a standard. And the Gemara continues, "Va'od bikish legalis taugim shok suvim." Now, Yonis and Menuziel wanted to continue the job and also translate suvim. By the way, Mephoshim say, so he didn't need to translate Chumash because in his times, the translation of Chumash had not yet been forgotten. Unkelus lived 100 or 150 years after him. So by Unkelus's times, it had been forgotten, and therefore he needed to reestablish it. In Yonis and Menuziel's times, the translation of Chumash was still clear, so he didn't need to translate it. So he had translated Nevi'im. Now he wanted to go ahead and do suvim as well. But Yotza Baskel v'Amrulay Dayecha, a Baskel came out and told him, enough, you've done enough. My timer, why doesn't Hashem want to translate Ksuvim? Mishum de'ispe, Kates Mashiach, because in Ksuvim, you have the Kates of when Mashiach is going to come. So Rashi says, particularly in Sefer Daniel. So therefore, if he would translate Daniel, like the way he translated Nevi'im, then he would be revealing the secret of when Mashiach is going to come. And we know from this week's parasha, when Yaakov wanted to reveal it, to his children, that Hashem doesn't want that revealed. The interesting point is, in that case, so okay, let him not translate Daniel, let him translate the rest of Ksuvim, but not Daniel. There are actually various things in Sfarim that indicate that Rashi is saying over here in Sefer Daniel, but there are actually other places in Ksuvim that also hint at this. The Avudraham brings something from the Rosh. He says in davening in Uvolatzion, we say the psukim over there. We say Vekora Zel Zeva Omar, and we say the Targum Yonason of it. Batisaini Ruach and the Targum of it, and then we say Hashem Yimlech Lenavod and the Targum of it. Now he says, why don't we say Yimlech Hashem La'olam, a pasuk from Ksuvim, from Tilim, like we do in Kaddish, like we do in Kedusha. And he brings from the Rosh because that doesn't have a Targum. And why not? Because we're saying over here that Yonis and Menuziel did not produce a translation of Ksuvim. And in fact, he says that when he was going to translate this Pasuk, specifically, that would be a Pasuk that contains Ketz Mashiach, and therefore Hashem didn't want him to translate it. So therefore, we don't have a translation. Now, that's a Pasuk from Tilim. So we see that Ketz Mashiach is in Tilim just as much as it is in Daniel. In fact, the Maharal says Bechlal, that he explains in one of his Sfarim, that Bechlal Ksuvim in general, all these Sfarim of Ksuvim are more associated with Ketz Mashiach than anything else, and therefore that's what we're saying why Yonis and Menuziel couldn't translate them at all. So if you look in a printed Tanakh, you will find most books of Ksuvim do have a Targum. There is a Targum on Tilim, there is a Targum on Eiv and on Mishle and so forth. But those Targumim, we're saying, are not from Yonis and Menuziel. Other people at some later time created those Targumim, but they don't have the skill of Yonis and Menuziel to reveal the secrets that are in them, like Ketz Mashiach, and therefore apparently there was no objection to that. Okay, so the Gemara asks for Targum Shal Torah Unkelus Hager Omrei. You're telling me that Unkelus is the one who composed the Targum to Chumash? V'ha Omer of Ikaba Oven Omer of Chananel Omer Rav. My Dichtiv, what does it mean? A Pasuk in, so Rashi says it's in Ezra. It's actually, we have it in Sefer Nehemiah because as we've talked about before, Sefer Ezra was split up into two by the Goyim many years ago. So now you have Ezra and Nehemiah, but as far as Halacha is concerned, they're considered all one big Sefer called Ezra. Anyway, it describes over there how one Rosh Hashanah, they gathered all the Jewish people together, and Ezra is reading to them from the Sefer Torah, and the Levim are explaining it to them. And the Pasuk says, Vayikru b'Sefer Torah Sadekim, they read from the Sefer of the Torah of Hashem, the Fodosh, explicitly, the Soim Sechel, giving the understanding, Vayavinu b'Mikra, and they contemplated what it says in the Pasuk. So what do all these phrases mean? Vayikru b'sefer Torah alakim zemikra. That means they lay in the actual words of Chumash. Mefurdish zatayru. When it says that they made it explicit, that means they translated it into Aramaic. At that point, many people did not know Lashon Kodesh anymore, so therefore they had to translate it for them. The same sechel elu apsukin. When it says they gave the understanding of the pasuk, that means the psukim, where one pasuk begins and one pasuk ends, which tells us therefore how to understand the psukim. Vayavinu b'mikra elu piskei taimim. When it says they contemplated and they understood what it says in the pasuk, that refers to the trup, which break up the pasuk. The pasuk syntax and allow you to and make it possible to understand which words go with what. Others say that it refers to the masoda of which words are mole and which ones are chaser. Anyway, so we see again that they had Targum already in the times of Ezra and Nehemiah, which was hundreds of years earlier than Onkelos. And again, the answer is Shchochem b'chozru b'yistum. Again, the answer is they had forgotten it during the time between Ezra and Nehemiah and the time of Onkelos. They had forgotten that original Targum, so now Onkelos reestablished it. In fact, one of the explanations of they forgot it means, I mean, how do you forget it? We said we're going to say later on in the third parak of our Masechta that every week they would read the Torah, they would say the Targum every when they're laying in the Torah, they would do pasuk by pasuk the Targum afterwards. So one answer is, in fact, you see again, you do have those various other Targumim that are printed in Mikros Gedolos Chumashim and in other places. So therefore, those include a lot of extra medroshim that they add and whatnot. So people forgot what the original Targum was. Onkelos basically goes according to the pshat of the pasuk. Sometimes, like in this week's parasha, where you have the brachas of Yaakov, then he explains the inner meaning of what Yaakov is saying. But most of the time, he gives a very literal translation, unlike these other Targumim that give sometimes very non-literal translations. So that might be what it means that they forgot, that in many places, they were using one of those other Targumim, and therefore they forgot what was the plain Targum that was supposed to be used, and now Onkelos reestablished it. So the Gemara says, "Mashna deraisa below is daza, v'adin vi is daza." Why is it when Onkelos produced his translation of Chumash, then the earth didn't shake, but when Yonas and Menuziel did his translation of Nevi'im, it did? The answer is deraisa, mefarsha milsa. The answer is Torah is generally very clear. So therefore, again, most of the time, Targum Onkelos just translates the Chumash word for word. So the fact that he's translating it is no big deal. He's not revealing any secret that otherwise was hidden. When it comes to Nevi'im, there are some things that are very clear, but then there are some things that are closed up and very obscure, and you wouldn't understand them without the Targum. Dichtiv, here's an example, a pasuk in Zechariah, by Yoimahu, on that day, Yigdal HaMispeid Yerushalayim, the mooning will be tremendous in Yerushalayim, Kimispad Hadad Rimon Bevikas Megiddon, like the mooning for Hadad Rimon in the valley of Megiddon. What is this talking about? We learned in Sukkah a few months back, two possibilities that means either that people are going to be mourning for Mashiach ben Yosef, who's killed. The Gemara tells over there, you have Mashiach ben Yosef and then Mashiach ben David. So it's the people are mourning for Mashiach ben Yosef, who was killed. The other possibility, the Gemara says, is that Hashem is going to kill the Yetzirah, and people are going to be crying over that. As it says over there, the Tzaddikim are going to be crying, how is it that we were able to conquer this tremendous mountain? The Rishayim are going to be crying, how could we not conquer this tiny little hair? But the point is, what's this misfade of Hadad Rimon in Bikas Megiddon? So for Omer Rabbi Yosef, who was particularly expert in the Targum, he says, if it weren't for Yonas and Menuziel's translation of this pasuk, I wouldn't understand what does the pasuk mean. Where do we find any place else in Tanakh where there was a mourning for Hadad Rimon in the valley of Megiddon? So what it means is, the Targum translates, "B'yomahu on that day, yiske misbada b'Yerushalayim, the mourning will be intense in Yerushalayim, k'misbada d'achav ba'omri, like the mourning that they had for Achav ben Omri, King Achav, d'kotor yose hadad rimen ben tavrimen v'romes gilod, where who hadad rimen ben tavrimen killed him in the valley of, in Romes gilod, hadad rimen was the king of Aram at that time. The psukim over there call him ben hadad, but the psukim also mentioned that the Hadad was the name of a idol of Aram. Rimon was another one. So the Gemara over here is saying, so the Targum over here is saying that he also went by besides going by the name Ben Hadad, he also went by the name Hadad Rimon in honor of his two idols. And so you have over there, the Pasuk describes how there was a war there in Ramos Gilad, and Achav was killed in the battle. So there was an intense mourning for him. The Gemara actually mentions that in Sanhedrin that the tzaddikim were happy when he died because he's such a rasha, but we're saying over here that the rishoyim and his courtiers and whatever mourned for him intensely. So the mourning in Yerushalayim la'asid lave is going to be just as intense as that. So that's the hadadrim part. And what's the megidoy uchamispeder the Yoshiya by Amon, and like the mourning for King Yoshiyahu, the son of Amon, the koto yaseh parechagira because megidoy who parenechoy killed in the valley of megidoy, where as we learned in Tainus, you had the whole story over there where Parinachoy wants his army to be able to pass through Eretz Yisrael, and Yeshiyahu refuses to let him through. So Parinachoy brought his army and they fought and Yeshiyahu got killed. So they, again, there was an intense mourning for him over there. So we're comparing to that. So now we understand what Mispad Hadad Rimon Bevikas Megiddon means. It means these two mournings that you find in Jewish history, which were particularly strong. There's a vote from the Vilna Gaon, in fact, that given what the Gemara is saying in Sukkah over there about how it's referring to when the Yitzhahara is killed, La'asid Lavoi, and the Tzaddikim and the Rishoyim are both going to be crying, each in their own way, about what they did or what they didn't accomplish. So that's why Yonas and Menazil over here is comparing it. That's why the Pasuk is comparing it to the mourning for Achav, which was primarily by the Rishoyim, and the mourning for Yoshiyahu, which was primarily by the Tzaddikim. The point is, again, there is an example of a Pasuk in Nevi'im where we would have no idea what it's talking about word for Yonas and Menazil. So that's why we're saying originally then Hashem was upset with that he's revealing these secrets, but Yonas and Menazil explained that he was doing it in order that there shouldn't be machlokes. Okay. Since we're talking about things that Rabbi Yirmiya or Rabbi Chiya bar Abba said, so the Gemara brings another one. So far we had his din about Megillah. We had his din about places nearby a city within a mill. We had about the letters Mansapach. We had about the Targum. So here's another one. Also, another point of it is that we were just talking about Daniel and Kate's Mashiach. So now the Gemara brings another thing regarding Daniel. The Pasuk describes one of the visions Daniel had. He says, "V'ra'isi ani Daniel levadi es amara." I, Daniel, alone saw this vision. The men who were with me did not see this vision. But a tremendous panic fell on them. And so they ran away and hid. So, man ninu anoshim. So the Gemara says, who are these men who were with it? On the bottom over here, there's a footnote. That says, the point is, in other words, we have to assume it wasn't just Stam people, because then what would be Daniel like this? Daniel is almost like expressing surprise. How is it that they didn't see this vision? So we can't just be talking about ordinary people. So it has to be, this refers to the three Nevi'im, Chagas, Schari, and Malachi. So now we understand, Daniel is saying, I'm very surprised. They're Nevi'im. How is it that they didn't see the same vision that I saw? So the Gemara says, "Inu adifu minei v'iu odif minei." Each group had an advantage over the other. The three of them had an advantage over Daniel, and he, on the other hand, had an advantage over them. Inu adifu minei, they have an advantage over him. The inu nevi'i v'iu lav navi. Their nevi'im, Daniel was not. Meaning, so Rashi says, in other words, because a navi, the definition of a navi is that he's sent with a message to the Jewish people. So Chagas, Chari, and Malachi did that. They were told Nevuas in Hashem, by Hashem to tell to the Jewish people. Daniel was not told to tell. Daniel was not told Nevuas to tell to the Jewish people. He had visions, but then he wrote them down in his sefer. But it wasn't something that he was told to announce to the Jewish people. So therefore, he doesn't count as a Navi. Later on Daf Yudalev, we're going to talk about the 48 Nevi'im. Rashi brings an opinion over there from Halachas Gedolos that Daniel was a Navi. There is a different explanation that Ramban says the vote is because all of Daniel's visions were what he was shown by Malach. A real Navi, somebody who counts as an actual Navi, would receive his Nevuah from Hashem himself. Okay, it would be Baspaklari Shein Meira. It would be like as if through like an unclear glass or an unclear mirror, like all the Nevi'im, except for Moshe Rabbeinu, but they would receive it directly from Hashem. When they receive through a Malach, then the Ramban says then they're not a Navi, and that explains Daniel. So therefore, in that sense, Chagas, Chari, and Malachi have an advantage over him. On the other hand, Ihu Odif Minayhu, on the other hand, Daniel had an advantage over them, the Ihu Chazu Inu Lai Chazu, because we're saying he saw this vision, they didn't. So the question is, well, if they didn't see it, my timer Isu, then why they get scared? Then why they get scared at all and run away? The answer is, even though they didn't see their mazel, meaning Rashi says it means the sar, the malach of every person lamaila is called his mazel. In Chassidus, it talks about specifically what we mean is the shodesh of the person's neshama. So you have a part of a person's neshama which is down here on earth inside his body, and then you have aspects of his neshama which remain lamaila, and those are the conduit for the ashpa that he gets from the lamaila. So that's called his mazel. So even though they didn't see it, their mazel saw it. And therefore, they didn't even know what they were afraid of, but therefore they felt afraid and they ran away. Amar Ravina, so Ravina says, Shmamina, you see from that, Hai Mandamivis, if a person is scared and he doesn't know why, it means, Afagab Di'ulei Chazi, it means he didn't see something. Mazel Chazi, it means his mazel sees and perceives some kind of danger to him. So the Gemara says, my takande. So what should he do to fix up the situation? Likri Krishma. What he should do is he should say Krishma. And in Krishma, we're saying Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. So that way, in other words, he's saying, I'm not afraid of anything else, that of any other power in the world that could harm me. There's even a thing, I think Balak Turim says it on the Pasuk. The first and last letters of the words, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, are Shin and Dalad, representing that saying Shema Yisrael protects a person against Shadim. Continues the Gemara, what if the person at the time is standing in a place of filth where he's not allowed to say Krishma? Then let him jump 4 amas from where he is right now. In other words, the idea would be, like we learned in Tainus, for example, that when Shadim have permission to attack a person, they can only do it in the particular place. So therefore, if he jumps 4 amas away, then now the Shadim, like so to speak, can't find him or don't have permission to harm him in the new place. The Eloi, what if not? What if there's no place to jump 4 amas, or he can't? Lema, then let him say the following. Let him say the goat in the slaughterhouse is fatter than me. In other words, in effect, he's saying to the shed who's trying to harm him, go bother the goat, go harass the goat, and go try to get him killed rather than me. You'll get better pickings with him than you will with me. Okay. Getting back now to halacha, now with all, after all these digressions, v'hashta de'amit medina medina u'medina v'ir v'ir l'drasha, now that we said that the double expression medina u'medina and ir v'ir is coming for a drasha, which, as we said, that it's coming to teach us that not only the walled city itself, but also any place nearby it, we said samoch or nira, also counts as the walled city and celebrates Purim on the 15th. So now that we have that, what about Mishpacha or Mishpacha Lamayasa? The Pasuk there mentions a third thing, which it also repeats. It says, Vayom Ma'ela Niskonim Manasim B'chol Dor V'Dor, Mishpacha or Mishpacha, Medina or Medina, V'ir V'ir. So Medina or Medina, V'ir V'ir, we're saying, tells us, not as we thought originally, that it means that there are different kinds of walled cities and different kinds of regular cities, because we said that wouldn't work out according to Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. We said, rather, it means that the not only the Medina, but the area around it, not only the ear, but the area around it counts. So then what about Mishpacha or Mishpacha? What are we learning from that? So Amar Rav Yosi bar Chanina, Lahavi Mishpachas Kohuna Leviya, it comes to include also the families of the Kohanim and Leviim, Shemavat and Avedasan, they have to set aside their Avodah, Ubayin Lashmaya Mikra Megillah, and they have to come hear the Megillah. So Tosfos says, by the way, it doesn't necessarily mean mevatlin, like what are they not going to do the avodah at all. It means, in other words, that since what they're doing is, like this, normally they would do the avodah in the Bais Mikdash the first thing in the morning. Instead, they're delaying it in order to hear Mikra Megillah, then that's called bitul. Now, the reason why they do it that way, Tosfos says, is because Pirsumei Nisa, you want to have as many people as possible together for Kriyas Megillah. Different Rishonim talk about different possibilities. So what would happen, in fact, if they didn't do that first thing in the morning? Let's say now in the afternoon, they need to hear Megillah, and they also need to do the Avodah, which would take preference. A number of the Rishonim say, come on, I mean, after all, the Avodah is Daraisa, Mikra Megillah is only Midrabanan, so therefore, obviously, Avodah would come first. We're talking about over here where there's enough time in the day to do both, and the question is just which one comes first. So the Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Kohenim Bavidasan, the Kohenim, even though they're doing their Avodah, the Leviim Beduchanan, the Leviim, even though they're supposed to be on their Duchan in the Bais Mikdash singing and playing the music, the Yisrael b'mamad, done on the Yisraelim, even though they're supposed to be doing their maimed, as we learned in Tainus, all of them are mevatel their avodah, avoyin l'shmai, mikra megillah, and they have to come here megillah. So again, mevatlin, as we just said, doesn't necessarily mean they don't do it at all, it means they delay it. Tani nami hochi, we learned similarly in Ebraisa, karin b'avodosan, levim b'dachon v'yisrael b'mamadon, kulon mevatlin avodosan, avoyin l'shmai, mikra megillah. And the Ebraisa continues, mikan somchu shal beis Rebbe. Based on this, the Chachamim in the yeshiva of Rebbe based themselves on that, Shemavatlan Talmud Torah, Uvoin Lashmaya Mikra Megillah. That they would set aside their Talmud Torah and come to hear Mikra Megillah. And they realized that Kavachomim Avoda. They would make Kavachomim based on Avoda. Uma Avoda Shi Hamura. Madach, the Avoda is a very serious thing. It's a very important thing. And yet, Mavaklinon Talmud Torah. And yet, we, and yet, we Mavaklinon from Mikra Megillah. Talmud Torah, like Koshikin. How much more so, Talmud Torah, which, as we're going to establish now in the Gemara, is even more important than the Avodah. There's a famous question, what do we mean with Vatlan Talmud Torah from Mikra Megillah? Mikra Megillah is part of Tanakh. It itself is Torah. So there's a few answers. We're not talking about the actual time of Mikra Megillah. We're talking about the time it takes to get there from Mikra Megillah. We're talking about even, let's say, you would have time to hear it later in the day, but you're coming now because of Beroi V'Mahadras Melech. But there is an explanation that several Achronim offer, which is that we mean Mevatlin Talmud Torah in the sense that during that time you could have been learning on a higher level. You were capable of learning Torah during that time on a higher level. Instead, you're only hearing the Megillah, which okay, it's part of Tanakh, but it's only Psukim. You're only hearing. You're not learning Torah on a deeper level, which you would have been capable of. Therefore, that can be called Bittul Torah. I've never quoted that many times in Sichas as pointing out the idea of we should understand Bittul Torah doesn't mean just not learning at all. It can also mean, like we're just saying over here, not doing them on the level that you're capable of. So we're saying when it comes to the Megillah, then that's an exception, but usually you don't do that. So the Gemara says, "Va'avoda chamura mitalmud Torah." Are you telling me that avoda is stronger than Talmud Torah, such that you can make a kavachomer and say that if you mevatel the avoda from Mikra Megillah, how much more so Talmud Torah, which is weaker? So it sounds like you're saying that Talmud Torah is weaker than the avoda. But how could that be? V'haksiv. We have a pasuk from which, once we finish darshan in this pasuk, we're going to understand that Talmud Torah is more important. The pasuk says, "Vayhi bi Yos Yeshua b'Yericho." When Yeshua was in Yericho, so they had just entered Eretz Yisrael. We don't mean actually they weren't in Yericho yet. This is before they had conquered Yericho. They were actually in Gilgal, but it was in the outskirts of Yericho. The Gemara elsewhere talks about that. We see from this that the outskirts of a city are considered like the city itself. So when he was in, meaning near Yericho, "Vayisa ena vayar." He lifted up his eyes and he saw, "V'hine ish omid l'negdav gomer." He saw a man standing in front of him, and the pasuk says that they had a conversation between them, and a few pesukim later it says "Vayishtachu." It says "Vayishtachu." La'apov doesn't actually say la'apov in the pasuk, but whatever. Yeshua bowed down in front of him. So first of all, we have to ask, "V'heichi ovid hachi?" How could Yeshua bow down to this unknown person? A person is not allowed to say shalom to somebody else at night, because we have to be concerned. He might be a shed. So by the same token, how is Yeshua bowing down to this person who might actually be a shed? The implication is the Gemara is saying that this took place at night. So how could he bow to him when it might be a shed? Tosfos says we're talking about Davka when we're outside the city and when it's at night, which this is how it was. It was outside the city of Yericho. It's at night. He's far away from Machne Yisrael, where there are people around. So you see a person, there's a likelihood that it might be a shed. If you're in the city or it's during the daytime or whatever, then you don't have a problem with it. So anyway, the answer is shiny hossam. It's different over there. De Omale, because before Yeshua bowed down, he said, "Ki ani sar tzva Hashem." I am the general of Hashem's host, meaning, in other words, this was a malach that Hashem had sent to assist the Jewish people in conquering Eretz Yisrael. So he knows that he's not a shed. The Gemara says, so what? V'duma mashakri. So what? Maybe it's a shed and he's lying and claiming to be a malach. The answer is gemiri. We have the Kabbalah. D'lei mapki shem shemayim levatola. The shedim do not use Hashem's name in vain. They respect the name of Hashem, The Gemara tells us in Chagiga that Shadim are half or halfway between people and Malachim. They have some characteristics of people and some characteristics of Malachim. So in their capacity as Malachim, they're going to respect Hashem's name and they're not going to use it for nothing. So therefore, once he says that he's Sartzva Hashem, then Yeshua knows that he's a Malach and therefore we can bow to him. Okay, you have the question, how are you allowed to bow to a Malach? Isn't that a Bezara as well? And an answer is because this is a Malach that Kishmi Bikirboi. This is Malach Matat, who incorporates, so to speak, Hashem's name within his own, and therefore when Yeshua is bowing to him, it's out of respect for Hashem. Anyway, so what does the Malach come to tell him? Omaloi, so he says to Yeshua, Emesh bitaltem tomet Rabbein HaAbayim. Yesterday you mevatel the tomet Rabbein HaAbayim. You didn't bring the Korban tomet yesterday afternoon. Now you're being mevatel from Talmud Torah. Now, how do we know that he said this? So Rashi explains, since we see from the Psukim that the Malach answers him, that the Malach says to him, after Bossi, I came now, so as we're going to see in the Gemara in a second, that means that he's telling him that they did something wrong with Talmud Torah. So he's saying, in other words, that after, right now, I'm coming about Talmud Torah. But in addition, there's also something wrong that you did yesterday. Namely, so you should have brought the Korban Tomid and you missed it because you're busy preparing the strategy and you're busy ambushing and whatever the city. And the fact is you can't fight by night anyway, so you shouldn't have done that. Tosfos explains, in other words, that the Oren wasn't in its place. The Kohenim are carrying the Oren around Yericho every day. So therefore, so when the Oren was not in place, then they didn't bring the Korban Tomid. In other words, what they should have done is, the Malach is telling them, you should have brought back the Oren that night. You should have brought back the Onan late in the day, and then there could be makru of the Korban Tomid. There is an explanation, I think, from the Rashba also, that what it means is they did bring the Korban Tomid, but because the Yisraelim were busy fighting, therefore they didn't have the Ma'amadis. And we learned in Tainus that the Ma'amadis are very important for the Korbanis to function properly, and therefore it's considered as if they were Mavatal, the Korban as a whole. And he's saying, so that was before, and now you're compounding the problem by not learning Torah. It's at night. You're not supposed to be fighting anyway. So Yeshua asked him, which one are you coming to tell us off for now that we should do different? After Bossi. So he says, I'm coming now, implying, in other words, I'm coming for the thing that's relevant right now. The Korban Tomid is already a done deal. Tosfos says that. So the word after is in connection. So like this, when you have, he said, Yeshua had asked the Malach, the Pasuk is not quoted here in the Gemara, but Yeshua had asked the Malach, halonu after imlatzareinu. So he was hinting, are you coming regarding Torah, which it says Torah tziva lonu Moshe, or are you coming regarding the Korban Tomid, which is meant to save us from tzareinu, from our enemies? And the answer is, after Basi, I'm coming regarding the Torah, on which it says, v'after kisvu lachem es ashir azos. There's another explanation brought from the Chofetz Chaim that says Torah can be described as after more than anything else because you have a chiyuv to learn Torah at all times of the day as opposed to most other mitzvahs which you only have certain times of the day when you do. So the Gemara says, miyad, so right away, meaning on the next possible occasion, the Pasuk says, vayolon Yeshua v'alayla ahu v'secha emek. Yeshua stayed overnight in the valley. So what it means is, in other words, that so this is actually in a later context when they're getting ready after Yericho, when they're getting ready to fight against the next place, then Yeshua fixed up the opportunity. And what does it mean? This teaches us that he stayed overnight learning the depths of halacha. So he fixed up that mistake that the Malach had criticized him for before. Tosfos points out the actual pasuk. The Gemara is actually combining together two pasukim. You have one pasuk that says Vayolan Yeshua b'alayla ahu b'secha am, and a few pasukim later you have Vayelech Yeshua b'alayla ahu b'secha emek. So the Gemara is kind of combining together those two pasukim for the derasha that it means that Yeshua stayed that night in the emek, meaning in the valley, meaning in the depths of halacha. So we see that he fixed up that mistake. Okay. So therefore, and we see from all of that that Rav Shmuel bar Unya says, Godol Talmud Torah Yosem Akravas Midin, that learning Torah is even greater than bringing the Korban Tomid. Shenema after Basi. As we see that the Malach is telling him that I'm only telling you off now for the after, for the fact that you're not learning Torah. So we see that learning Torah is greater than the Avodah. So what's the Kal V'chomer we said before that if you mevatel the Avodah for Mikra Megillah, how much more so Talmud Torah? It doesn't work. Talmud Torah is more important than the Avodah. The answer is like Kasha hold the Rabbim v'hold the Yochid. There's no contradiction. We're talking about Talmud Torah the Rabbim versus of a Yochid. So here it was, the whole Jewish people were there. So their Talmud Torah is more important than the Korbanos. On the other hand, when it comes to Talmud Torah, the Yachid, that's less important, and therefore the Kal V'Chomer works. That if you can be Mevatel, if you can push off the Korbanos, the Avodah, and the Bais Mikdash, for the for Mikra Megillah, how much more so Talmud Torah of Yachid? So the Gemara says, the Yachid Kal, you're telling me that Talmud Torah of a Yachid is more lenient, and it's not as important. We learn in a Mishnah, we're going to learn it at the end of Moed Katan in a couple of months, Baz Hashem. Noshim b'moyed ma'anos, during Chol HaMoed, the women, when there's a levaya going on, or when a person was already buried, the women are allowed to ma'anos, which means the Mishnah goes on to say that it means that one woman, that it means that all the women together, they used to have, sometimes it would be just the women, sometimes they'd hire professionals, whatever, they would all together say some kind of kina, some kind of sad lament over the mess. So that's ma'anos. So on Chol HaMoed, they're allowed to do that. Avaloi metapchos, but they're not allowed to metapchos, which means that they clap or they slap. So Rashi says it means they slap their chests. Tosfos says it could mean other parts of the body as well. It was part of the mourning rituals. So that they can't do on Chol HaMoed. Rabbi Shmuel says no. If these women are near the mitta, then they're allowed to do metapchos. They're allowed to do the slapping or banging as well. And the Mishnah continues. Rosh Chodesh Chanukah v'Purim ma'anos metapchos v'zeh v'zeh. On Rosh Chodesh Chanukah and Purim, they're allowed to do ma'anos. They're allowed also to do metapchos on either one of those. Avaloi mekoninos, but on Chanukah and on Purim and on Rosh Chodesh, they're not allowed to do mekoninos, which is where one of them starts it off and everybody answers after her. That's considered a greater expression of avelos, and you can't do that on those days. But Rabbi Bar Huna says that doesn't apply. Ein moed b'fnei tamid chacham. When it comes to a tamid chacham, when it comes to the funeral of a tamid chacham, then that doesn't apply. Even the restrictions of Chol HaMoed don't apply, and you're allowed to be ma'anis and metapchos in his honor. Kol shekin Chanukah u'Purim. How much more so Chanukah and Purim you're allowed to. So we see that because we're talking about he was one individual Talmud Chacham, and we're saying that his one individual Torah learning has now stopped because he passed away, and we're saying that we're able to override Chol HaMoed for it. So we see how important Talmud Torah of a Yochid is. Tosfos says also, the point isn't that we're saying that on Purim, even though you're being mevatel from Mikra Megillah on the face of it, you're still allowed to in order to do this hesped for him. How much more so then? So we see that Talmud Torah is stronger than Mikra Megillah. The answer is covered. Covered Torah Kamer. You're talking about giving covered to the Talmud Chacham for his Torah. That's different. Covered Torah, the Yachid Chomer, Talmud Torah, the Yachid Kal. To give honor to his Torah, namely after he passed away, that's more stringent. That's a stronger thing than Mikra Megillah, and therefore it can override Mikra Megillah. But the Talmud Torah of the Yachid itself, while he's alive, is more lenient, and therefore we're saying that it has to be set aside for Mikra Megillah. Onward, Omar Rava. So Rava says, "Pshitali." Now it's obvious to me. We're going to talk about several different things that might interfere with Mikra Megillah, and which ones do you set aside from Mikra Megillah, and which we don't. So Rava is going to start first with several things that he knows that for sure what the din is with them, and then he's going to end up asking about one of them. So Pshitali, it's obvious to me, Avoida Umikra. If you have a choice to do the Avoida right now, or to read the Megillah, Mikra Megillah Adif, then we know that reading the Megillah takes precedence. Midi Rabbi Yosi Bar Chanina, based on what we just said on Amar Aleph, what Rabbi Yosi Bar Chanina said. Another one, Talmud Torah, Mikra Megillah. We know that if it's a question of learning Torah or Mikra Megillah Adif, then learning the Megillah is more important. Midi Samchu Shal Beis Rebbe. Because again, we said on Amar Aleph that in Beis Rebbe, they realized that point and they would be mevatel their Talmud Torah for Mikra Megillah. Next, he continues, Talmud Torah, mes mitzvah adik. There's no question if it's a question of learning Torah versus burying a mes mitzvah. There's no question the mes mitzvah takes precedence. Actually, Tosfos says it may not even mean a mes mitzvah. It may mean any mess where you don't have the appropriate number of people at his funeral. So then you should be mevatel Talmud Torah for that. And we know that. So we're mentioning a mes mitzvah because we're going to talk about it soon, because the proof he's going to bring is from a mes mitzvah. And we know that mes mitzvah is more important. Miditanya, because we learn in a blaisa. Mevachon Talmud Torah lo tzas mes olachnas eskala. We set aside Talmud Torah for hatzas mes, for taking out a body to be buried, and for achnas eskala, for helping a chosen kala get married. So therefore, we know that's how it is. Another one, avodo mes mitzvah mes odi. Now, mes mitzvah odi. We know that if it's a question of doing the avoda versus burying a mes mitzvah, we know the mes mitzvah takes precedence. We know that mi ul achoisei. We know that from the word ul achoisei in the pasuk. The Tanya, we learn in a brisa, ul achoisei ma tamid leimer. The pasuk says about a nazir, it says he's not allowed to become tamei mes, and then it says not for his father, not for his mother, not for his brother, not for his sister. So this is part of a longer brisa which goes through all four of them. Why does it have to mention his father? Why does it have to mention his mother, etc.? So now the brisa has a part that says, "What's the chiddush of mentioning that he can't become tummy to his sister? Once we say already he can't become tummy, even when his parents pass away, all the more so his sister." So it means, suppose a person is on his way to shecht his korban Pesach, or to make a bris milah for his son, and he hears that one of his relatives passed away, you would think that he should go and become tameh for the mess. We say that no, he should not become tameh. Just like a nazir does not stop his nazirus to become tameh for his relatives, neither does this one. There's a vote that the Torah Tzmima says, which actually his shver, Rabbi Elazar Moshe from Pinsk, says it also in his Chidushim in the back of the Gemara, that the word ul achoisei over here is related to the word ichui, which means to connect together. These things, Pesach and Milah, are the two mitzvahs esse, where if a person fails to do them, he's chayiv kares. So now, therefore, we're associating them with the word ul achoisei, that the person is trying to reconnect his neshama with Hashem and avoid kares. So then we're saying that he doesn't become tummy, that he doesn't set aside those mitzvahs to bury his sister. Now, continues the Braisa, Yochol Kashem She'enim Atamal Achoisei Kachenim Atamal Mes Mitzvah. You would think the same thing should be true. This guy who's on his way to do the Korban Pesach or Mila should not become tummy for a Mes Mitzvah either. Tamad Lamev, Ola Achoisei. Therefore, the Pasuk specifically mentions his sister, implying La Achoisei Hu De'enim Atamei. So he doesn't become tummy for his sister, Avam Atamal Mes Mitzvah, but he would become tummy for a Mes Mitzvah. So therefore we see that even if you have the avoda to do, in this case, the person has a korban pesach to bring, nevertheless, when you have a mes mitzvah, then you set it aside in favor of that. Now, with all of that introduction, Boi Rava asks the question, Mikra Megillah or mes mitzvah, Heiminayu Odin. When you have a choice between Mikra Megillah or mes mitzvah, which one takes precedence? Mikra Megillah Odif Mishum Pesumei Nisa. Do we say that Mikra Megillah takes precedence because it has the important thing of Pesumei Nisa, of publicizing the Nes? Or do a Mes Mitzvah Odif Mishum Kroid Abrius? Or maybe the Mes Mitzvah takes precedence because of covered for human beings, that he shouldn't be staying, that he shouldn't stay unburied. Rav says, Bosa de Boya Hoda Poshta. After Rava asked the question, he was able to answer it. Yes, Mes Mitzvah Odif, the Mes Mitzvah would take precedence. Do Amama, Godo Kroid Abrius, Shadoichas, Loisa Seshabatura, because we say elsewhere that covered abrius, respect for human beings, is such an important thing that it overrides the loisa say in the Torah, meaning the loisa said that the Torah tells us don't disobey what the Chachamim say. So therefore here, since Mikra Megillah is Dirabbanan, then therefore, yes, we can set it aside because of covered abrius. So again, Tosfos is saying that we're not necessarily talking over here only about a mes mitzvah. There is a good deal of discussion among the Amoraim. Is that so? Is it in fact correct to say that, like Tosfos is saying, that only not only a mes mitzvah, but anybody else where there's a levaya to take place and there aren't enough people there should override Mikra Megillah? That's one question. And another question is, when we say override, again, do we mean only if there's enough time in the day to do both, and then we're saying you do the mes mitzvah, and then you go and lay Megillah, or do we mean even if there might not be enough time in the day left to do the Mikra Megillah, nevertheless the mes mitzvah takes precedence? So there's a lot of discussion in Shulchan Aruch and the Noisa Kalim about these topics. But in any case, a mes mitzvah definitely overrides Mikra Megillah, we're saying. to be continued tomorrow, Beth Hashem.